Hello, everybody. Welcome to Interview with a Horror Virgin. I'm your host, James, and with me I have...
My name is Jimmy Williams. I am the team leader and lead investigator for Southern Ghost Investigations, and I'm happy to be here with you, James.
Well, thank you so much. He's part of our paranormal team. He's our leader. He's helped us a lot, and we've been getting a lot of stuff that we would love to show off very soon once we get it all edited.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm doing good, and I'm glad you just came on to the show and all that stuff. I know that you're a horror fan. If you want to share some cool... Tell me about your horror knowledge itself. You know, I don't want to get like, you know, too, maybe like give me a year history of horror right now. But, you know, like what was horror for you as a gym?
Oh, man. Of course, with me, you got to take it way back. I mean, not all the way back to black and white, so obviously, hopefully not. But I have a lot of experiences with horror movies. You know, I grew up in the era with the 1980s slasher movies. That was a big thing, to get to go to the theater and see Jason. And in my opinion, I think we've discussed this, one of the greatest jump scares in all of horror movies is the very first Friday the 13th, when he comes up out of the lake at the end and grabs the girl. So I grew up in the 80s watching a lot of that. As far as probably what scared me the most as a horror film, I have to definitely go with Salem's Lot. It was a movie that was made in the 70s. About vampires, and to me as a small child, it was terrifying. There was a scene where the vampire was a ghost of a child, actually a vampire, and he floated up this huge like picture window, and the other kid was in the bed, you know, and he was his best friend. Well, I had a friend that not long before that had passed away, and the house I grew up in, we had a window kind of like that, and it was sort of in my bedroom. So yeah, I was a little bit nervous after seeing that one. That was probably my biggest scary movie that terrified me. And then as I got older, there was another one that I've yet to watch all the way through. That was Pet Sematary. At the very beginning of it, when the car hit the kid, I turned it off. I could not watch the rest of that.
That is a hard part for people. That because Jim is a parent, and I know for like anyone who's a parent who watches and listens to the show that when kids get killed off in like horror films, not just, well, even in any kind of like media, it's hard to watch because they're innocent.
Exactly.
And I feel like that tugs at the heartstrings when all of a sudden it's like, wow, this film is like, you know, gonna go straight for the jugular and be like, okay, nobody is safe. Everybody has to, you know, suffer. Now, you were mentioning Salem's Lot, and before we get to our film, I want to talk about Salem's Lot for a bit, because I also like Salem's Lot.
Okay.
It's Tobe Hooper, who did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but he was the one that knew how to do it right, because other directors didn't want to touch it because they didn't care, because it was TV as well. And that's the thing, because I feel like when people do horror on TV, kind of like, you know, a miniseries, and you put a director there, they're not going to care. But you take someone like Tobe Hooper, who just, you know, got done with Texas Chainsaw, who knows how to do horror, he did a really, really good job with Salem's Lot.
Yeah, and you're correct. It was a miniseries, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was 3 hours long if you, like, just did the whole thing at once.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be able to tell you a whole lot about it. Don't laugh at me. Here's my reason why. Remember, it terrified me as a child. We watched this downstairs in our den, mom and dad on the couch and my sister and I on the floor watching this miniseries as it went along. And I haven't watched it since. I have not been able to bring myself to watch it since.
It's a good one. I mean, the book's really good as well, but I really, really like the movie as well. I mean, it stars James Mason in there, and anybody who knows who James Mason is, I doubt some of my younger people know this, but if you ever watched 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, he was Captain Nemo. And he was also in William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, the black and white one. He played Brutus.
Yeah, I also believe that David Soul, the guy who played... is he the Starsky or Hutch, the blonde-headed one?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Not the movie, but the series, the TV show back in the 70s. I believe he was in that.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think so.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while as well, because it's one of those films where you have to, well, I say films, but it's a miniseries, you have to sit down and you kind of watch it, and it is like over 3 hours long because it was a miniseries, so like if you like it, that's how it was, and you kind of have to sit and watch the whole thing with no breaks, even though you can clearly see where the breaks were at.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a really good movie, and that whole scene you talked about actually was shot in reverse.
Really?
That one scene. Like, if you go back and, like, watch it at some point, you watch that whole, like, bedroom scene with the fog coming in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it took Tobe Hooper to do that because he knew, like, how to make it look creepy. Put everybody in reverse. The eyes. I swear I wish I knew how they did that. I want to say it was contact lenses, but I don't know if they had the technology.
Early 70s? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. But it was really creepy how they got the kids' eyes to kind of look like that.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that scene if I can stomach it.
It is. Yeah. It's a good one. I meant, like, I feel like we're going to go off on vampires for a bit, because I feel like vampires now have changed drastically.
Oh, definitely.
From
definitely.
Even the Bela Lugosi, or not even Bela Lugosi, from Nosferatu all the way up till now with the most, like, recent vampire film that we have, The Last Demeter, which is basically Dracula, but the funny thing is...
I'm dying to see it.
I'm also wanting to see the new Nosferatu film that's going to come out, which has Willem Dafoe playing Nosferatu versus him in Shadow of a Vampire, where he played Max Schreck, who was the actor for Nosferatu. Try to wrap your head around that for a bit. Wow. So, yeah, I know, right, a lot of information. Would you say, like, vampires, like, you know... a favorite of yours, like classic monsters?
Not really. Again, probably favorites of mine, I'm going to have to go to the 80s slasher movies. My all-time favorite is, oddly enough, most people would disagree, but my favorite is Jason. You know, you've got everybody that likes Freddy. They like Michael Myers, Ghostface. Jason's my hero. He's the one. To me, he was silent through all these films. He made no noise, and he just stalked. And to me... that was creepy. You turned around and there he was. You tried to run away from him. There he was. And how did he move so fast?
I know. It's crazy. I mean, a lot of stuff about Jason is, like, unexplained. And I feel like Jason's the one that kind of sealed it with, like, killers not dying versus what happened with his mother in the first film. But then, like, after the second film and so on, I feel like a lot of people kind of saw that and wanted to run with it. Mm-hmm. Which I think that's why Michael Myers kind of kept going. Versus, like, you know, with the first two Halloween films.
Yeah.
Even though I really wish they ended Halloween with Halloween 1, where Loomis looks out, you know, the balcony and the body's gone.
Right.
And continue with the anthology of the Halloween series.
Right, right, right.
That way everybody wouldn't have been so upset with Season of the Witch. Because I never understood why people hated Season of the Witch so much. It's not amazing, but it's something different.
Right.
And I feel like people don't do that anymore with horror films. Would you happen to agree, like, horror and everyone does, like, remakes of stuff? No one really is doing anything original.
Oh, it's not even horror, James. It's science fiction as well. Mm. And my hat's off to him, Mr. Abrams. Oh, my God. You know, Star Trek. He took the original movies and turned them completely around, but with the same storyline.
Okay.
And to me, that was just... brilliant, you know. So some of the remakes, yes, and then you get others, you're like, why on earth did you dig that up? You know.
Yeah. How did you feel about the Halloween remakes? I say remakes, the most recent ones.
Yeah. Originals are better. Same thing with the Friday the 13th. When they got into all this Jason Takes Manhattan, when they got into Freddy versus Jason, you know, that wasn't down Main Street for me.
Yeah. Well, the concept is cool, I'll give it that, but when you watch it, it's just kind of like there's really nothing else amazing. It's just two iconic horror figures duking it out.
I will also admit, live on camera, I suppose, that as a teenage boy in the 80s, that's not the only reason you watched horror movies.
Absolutely. TNA.
There you go.
TNA, because that's just what it was.
And it was the good thing. Back then, the only thing we had to do was to take our... dates to the movies. That's where we went.
Yep.
So, you know, what better thing to do than to take them to a horror movie?
Exactly. I meant, like, some of the exes I have shown Friday the 13th for the first time, and their reaction is the best thing ever.
Always.
From the Kevin Bacon scene to even that last scene.
That's right, Kevin Bacon.
I think the Kevin Bacon scene is what sets it up first, because that's when they jump, but then when that last scene comes, that's when they, like, flail almost a little bit.
That is an all-time great, in my opinion. When he comes up out of that water and grabs the girl. That, to me, is the all-time great.
Yeah, and I know I've told Jim this before, but the inspiration for that last scene came from when Tom Savini went to go see Stephen King's Carrie, and that last scene with Carrie coming up out of the grave, that's when he was like, I got something else to give us to Friday the 13th. He called back the cast real quick and said, we're going to do this real fast.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know, and that's when he gave us, like, the iconic, like, you know, figure of Jason coming out of the water.
Yeah. And another thing about the Jason movies that I really enjoyed and liked about it was the character progressed. Mm-hmm. You know, first it was his mother until the very end when he takes over, you know, and then in Friday the 13th 2, sorry, I do stutter, I have a speech impediment.
You're fine.
In Friday the 13th 2, he was wearing, if I remember, you correct me if I'm wrong, like a sack over his head.
Yeah, like a pillow sheet looking thing.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, the boy Tommy had the hockey mask that he ends up picking up, and that became his trademark, which you're wearing the shirt today.
Oh, yes,
but
I am.
But that became his trademark, was the hockey mask. And then after Tommy hit him in, I believe it was Tommy, but anyway, after Tommy hit him in the head with the machete, they kept the cut on the hockey mask throughout the rest of the movies.
They keep his scars, what you're saying. You just see like how much of Jason has not changed since, like, you know, 10 so many years have passed.
That's right. And wasn't it you that was telling me something about, it might not have been, it might have been someone else that I was talking with recently, but someone has told me something about how the ch-ch-ch-ha-ha was invented. Was that not you?
I think I did tell you that as well. It was just kind of like invented right then and there on the spot or something. I forgot specifically what it was, but it was something very simple that we're just kind of like, oh, really? That's all it was? But I know everyone's probably thinking, oh, is Jim going to be watching Friday the 13th? No, if he knew this much about the film, I would not be giving him
That's
this.
Right.
Now, let me ask one question that'll give us a nice segue into the film.
Okay.
How do you feel about, like, you know, I'm going to give away the title just by saying this. How do you feel about films that have something to do with, like, spirituality, exorcisms, and demons and ghosts?
I'm going to bring up another movie to tell you what I think about it. And this is why, when you advertised this particular film, I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. There was a movie that came out called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. That was when you watch a film that you just cannot take your eyes off of, that was one for me. I enjoyed that movie from beginning to end. Number one reason why I did is I believe in it. I certainly believe that Satan, if you want to call him that, or demons, whatever you want to
Lucifer,
say.
Lucifer, any type of name that's been translated through history.
Can and does possess people. I don't think it happens every day, you know. I do think it's something that really does happen. And the reason why I say so is, you know, I mean, we're in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, well, I see angels. We entertain angels unaware. The Bible even says that. But you cannot believe in angels and not believe in demons. There has to be a balance. So they're real. That's why I chose this movie.
Good. And he does have some truth to it. And it's just not, and everyone's probably thinking it's not just Christian faith. If you go out through history of any type of spirituality from ancient Asia, China, Egypt, they all have good and evil.
That's right.
There seems to be that common theme with just, you know, yep, you can believe in all the good that you want, but they also have these other things that they fear. And I'm going to go off on another tangent here. Well, that's why I love Asian horror a lot, because a majority of their films are all about the spiritual side of their culture, from the dangerous side with curses and all this to possessions. And I love The Ring. The Ring is a great film. I love the Japanese version so much because it shows such what curses can do and how fast they can travel. But they have rules. That's the thing here I was going to segue into next, because he's watching Exorcist 3, by the way. But they have rules according to those that have faith in any type of religion that Correct. They cannot break.
Exactly.
They are bound by certain root laws. That's it.
Wow. You're talking about Asian films and the balance between good and evil. You know, that's not just in horror movies. That's in anything you go to watch. There's the balance between good and evil. Karate Kid.
Yep.
Star Wars. You had the Empire. You had the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has a balance. There I am quoting Karate Kid. Oh, Daniel Song, everything has a balance. Life about balance.
Life, be like water, you know, like Bruce Lee would say in one of his interviews, be like water. Water is formless, but when you put it in a cup, it becomes a cup, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Some just really cool stuff like that. Yeah, me and he grew up in the 80s, but I still like to go back and look at stuff in the 80s because there's a lot of cool stuff back there. But yeah, he's going to be watching.
We can say 80s, that's good.
Okay, good. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, he's going to be watching Exorcist 3. This is a very underrated Exorcist film because there was so much backlash after Exorcist 2, The Heretic, came out. I absolutely hate that film, and I feel like 99% of the horror community hate The Exorcist 2, The Heretic, because it's such an insult to the first one. Because first of all, you have a director of the second film who absolutely hated the first film. He said it was terrible, and he wanted to do something else. And speaking of Star Wars, James Earl Jones is in the second film. Does he have a good part? Not necessarily, no. He just kind of dresses up like a locust and roars like a lion.
Well, when does James Earl Jones not roar like a lion?
That is true. He was
even in cartoons. That's right.
But yeah, so you've never heard anything about Exorcist 3?
Oh, God. No. And let me even go as far as to say, don't shoot me. Don't hate the mailman. I've never seen Exorcist 1.
Really?
I have not.
Okay. Maybe I'll have to do something like that. Do a reverse thing here. First show him Exorcist 3 and then Exorcist 1, because I know you said you loved the Exorcism of Emily Rose.
That's right.
And while we're on that topic real quick, It's a very good film, but people also got to understand this isn't going to be something like the first Exorcist film that was in. This is told kind of like through a courtroom drama because this was a real thing that had happened. People believe that she was possessed, but then they kind of felt like it was a mixture of her being completely undiagnosed with some kind of mental illness as well, because she was also suffering from malnutrition when
that's
she
right.
passed.
That's right. Modern take on the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Yes. We could say that.
Yeah, I meant like, I'm not trying to debunk everything here. I'm always open to stuff, but sometimes, unfortunately, things just happen to be very objective. That's the way they were.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you might have felt at the time. This is what it was, and that was just very unfortunate for Emily Rose. That's why exorcisms aren't a big practice anymore. They have to get like special permission from the Catholic Church. Actually, we have a demonologist on our tour.
That's right, we do.
Our investigation group, excuse me. Yeah.
Well, you know me and my objectivity. You've known me long enough to know I want absolute proof.
Yeah.
That's the way we do it when we investigate. That's the way I do it when I watch movies.
You have to.
You know, I have to relate. I have to relate to realism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an analyst.
You have to. I meant like, and like we were saying earlier, when it comes to the good, there's got to be the evil. But there are some, now with the Exorcist 1 film, there are some characters I will have to just like very gently brief you on with all that's happening. Because according to a lot of people, Exorcist, the first Exorcist film, still has to be the scariest film of all time, according to a lot of people.
I've heard that.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of controversy behind it. The poor Linda Blair, who was Reagan, she went through a lot on set. Rest in peace, William Friedkin passed away a couple weeks ago, actually. Yeah, he was 87 years old. That man, he made a name for himself with the Exorcist film. A little crazy on set, firing a gun on set to get Ellen Burstyn to jump when he wanted her to. He got her to jump, but it's just kind of like, whoa, guy, chill out a little bit. Yeah. And I think even Ellen Burstyn was actually injured on set too, as well as poor Linda Blair. And she was like a young, like 12, 13-year-old girl. So again, watching someone innocent kind of go through some real pain as well as like movie pain. And there was also a serial killer on set as well.
Really?
Yeah, but we'll get more into that. But let's focus on Exorcist 3 because okay. I could talk Jim to death on Exorcist 1.
You and I tend to do that when we get together.
Exactly. I meant like, but people seem to like it. Now, this film stars three important people. George C. Scott, General Patton himself.
There you go.
Great, great actor. Passed away about like in the 90s, I believe. Ed Flanders, great actor as well. But then the one that's the pinnacle is Brad Dourif. Do you know who Brad Dourif is?
I do not.
Have you seen Child's Play?
You mean Chucky?
Chucky. He is the voice of Chucky.
Oh, really?
He is. Okay. Brad Dourif is a very underrated actor. You've seen Lord of the Rings, right?
Multiple times.
The second, the Twin Towers?
Mm-hmm.
Wormtongue. The man who's like, you know.
That's actually him?
That's Brad Dourif. That is him there. That when he's like, you know, talking to the king, goes, why do you bring these troubles to his majesty?
That's right. That's right.
That's Brad Dourif. Very talented actor.
Definitely.
He is. I feel like he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves because he's very good at his job. He was also in a very fun film called Spontaneous Combustion that has a weird cameo of John Landis in it. Why? I don't know. But it's another fun little thing. But
To me, cameos are ingenious in film.
They are. Now, some actors like to have the cameos, but I heard like from an interview when someone was talking to John Landis, they asked about Spontaneous Combustion, and he just kind of got like a look like, out of all the things you want to talk to me about, why do you want to talk to me about that, you know? But yeah, so yeah, those are like the big people. I meant like George C. Scott is great in this because he's playing a character that is from Exorcist 1, but they're played by two different actors because unfortunately the actor that was supposed to continue this, he passed away in 1997 at the age of 64. He was the original lieutenant. Now, with the Exorcist in mind, people always worry about when they watch an Exorcist film, it may like project itself onto people. Do you like believe that in a way?
From Hollywood? No.
Okay, because people actually believe that with the first Exorcist film, that the devil himself was inside of the celluloid because of how controversial and how shocking it was at the time.
I am not going to agree with that at all. To me, it's television or movies, and you have to be able to separate that from reality.
Like you create your own devil, so to speak, the more you believe in it.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. That's my opinion on it.
Oh, good. So, what are you expecting out of Exorcist 3 before we get started?
What am I expecting? I'm expecting to see a lot of priests holding crosses, maybe a little bit of vomiting from the victim. My okay. mind goes to, I don't know why it did, but it went to Casper, the Friendly Ghost movie, when he walks in, you know, and to try to exercise the ghostly trio.
And then his head's around backwards. Yeah,
it comes out backwards. And with vomit all over his shirt.
Oh, and then the weirdest cameo of, like, the Ghostbusters with Dan Aykroyd.
Call somebody else.
And you're just like, and on top of the cameos, we get Mel Gibson.
Of all people.
It makes no sense. Oh, man.
As well as Clint Eastwood.
Yes, Clint Eastwood, the Crypt Keeper, Donnie Ranger.
Oh, that's right, the Crypt Keeper was in that.
He does the whole Macaulay Culkin thing. I mentioned this in my Tales from the Crypt. He grabs his knee, he does that whole thing. It's hilarious. I love it. Oh, man, Casper. Well,
I love that movie.
If you're ready, Jim, we're going to get started and watch The Exorcist 3. All right, guys, we'll be back in a little bit.
Everybody pray for me.
All right, here we go. In 3, 2. Well, we just got done watching Exorcist 3. I'm gonna let Jim here take the reins, and I want to hear his whole reaction after this.
Oh, wow. So, take the reins. That's I usually don't. I like to follow the lead, but I tell you, the last 15 minutes of that movie was incredible. You know, I don't want to give away any storylines or anything like that to others that may not have seen it. I didn't get the vomiting, I will say that. I think it might would have been better. I'm anxious to see the first one with you. I think it might would have been better to have seen the first one, obviously, first, because of some of the characters I was not familiar with. Didn't think a jump scare would get me either, and there we go. But oddly enough, it wasn't the one that you thought would get me.
Mm-hmm.
The movie itself was worth watching. Very, very nicely done, very well done. A lot of it was, like I pointed out through the movie, some of the objects they used were actually very nostalgic for me, being the time period that I grew up in. Actually, after the time period I grew up, in the 70s and 80s, and this movie was done in the 90s, but it was well done. The details in it were well done.
Well, good, good. Glad to hear it. Now, this is directed by William Peter Blatty, who was the actual author of the real Exorcist book that's based on the true story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did everything. He wrote it and he directed it. All this was his, but he based it completely off of his book. Now, I like this movie too, but I have my problems with it. It's the pacing. But the reason I say that is because with writers, when they try to write down everything, they think they can translate that onto film. So when there's instances of George C. Scott just kind of doing random stuff, you're just like, why is he doing this? And I feel like that's where it doesn't translate well. Like the koi fish he was talking to the father about.
Exactly.
I was like, did we really need that for anything other than just him talking to him and establishing that they're a friendship? You know what I mean?
Right. One thing I noticed as far as along those lines, actually, that... there was one thing I really didn't care for in the movie, it was this, that the actual killings were not shown. They were implied. And I won't say how they were implied, but each one was kind of, you know, the same way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, the statue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you knew when a killing happened, except for I missed one, because of that. So, I'm more of an 80s slasher guy. Show me the blood and guts.
I gotcha. I feel like they were trying to experiment with something where what you don't see is kind of left to your imagination. I think
a lot
that's
of inference.
What they were trying to do. A lot of symbolism was in here as well with the Fabio, random cameo with Fabio.
Yeah, why?
Exactly. That's what we were talking about cameos earlier prior to this all. And I'm just like, yep, that's right. Fabio's just in here. Why? Because Fabio, that's why. Yeah, and I think like that's where it loses a lot of people. Some of those that like weird dream sequence that George C. Scott has.
Oh, I liked that.
It's interesting, but again, since you haven't seen the first one, for some of us it was like, that's it.
Ah.
What does this have to do with anything? But yeah, no, we'll definitely bring you back for the first one. If you haven't seen it, then I'm totally here for it. But yeah, but out of all the characters here, who's like one of your favorites?
Well, definitely George C. Scott's character,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt, and. The white-haired priest, I liked him. He was cool.
Oh yeah, he didn't have that much screen time, but you know he's you'll know who he is when you watch the first one, Friends with Father Karras and all that. But yeah, and again, Brad Dourif was just he's great as the Gemini Killer in
that. Oh yeah, oh the acting
very very threatening. They actually had to reshoot his scenes again I forgot specifically why, but I think like they had to like do it again for like UK versions and like American versions or something like that. So he said, all right, and he had to go out to California, but he said, okay, I'll come out and reshoot my scenes, but book me a hotel for 3 nights and you'll have me. So what he would do is he did a technique in the acting industry called the Meisner technique, and I do it myself, where you don't have to keep looking at your lines to memorize them. Just kind of briefly look at them and let and feel them come to you. Like, be the character and feel these lines. You're not memorizing lines. You're trying to embody this character. So he would lock himself in his hotel for those nights to get into character as the Gemini Killer. And he does a phenomenal job with it.
I agree. His role in portraying his situation as far as possession or whatever you want to say, was incredibly done. I don't want to give too much away for somebody.
That's fine. Hasn't. Well, I meant like this is, I'll just tell everyone right now, this isn't going to give too much away. It's based off of William Peter Blatty's Legion book. Now, the reason it wasn't called Legion is because Warner Brothers wanted it to be called Exorcist because they wanted to keep marketing off of their big buck, the title from the first one.
Right.
Same thing with the second one, but then with the whole thing with Warner Brothers, they wanted to, you know, market in on The Exorcist because that was a huge film at the time. There was some bickering between, you know, William Blatty and William Friedkin at the time because he wanted to call it Legion. But then Warner Brothers is like, no, we need to call it The Exorcist 3 to help stop what we did with Exorcist 2, which was rightfully so. And I think, like, there was a pitch meeting, and the pitch meeting itself for William Friedkin and William Peter Blatty was $500,000.
Oh my God.
Just to go to the meeting. Yes. That's why they were so like hell-bent on, no pun intended, to get this off the ground and you know, ready to go. So
Legion would have been a good name for it.
See, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you called it Legion instead of Exorcist 3, I think that would have hyped it more but still connected it to the previous story.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, what were some of your favorite moments from the film?
Some of my favorite moments. I liked the dream scene.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was neat. I loved the end where the final fight, good versus evil. That was fantastic. Let's see. Oh, the creepy old lady. She was neat.
The catatonic one?
The radio.
The radio lady you're talking about.
Yeah, she was neat.
Well, like you said, the catatonic are so easy to possess. And I feel like is some truth to that because you're pretty much...
You're halfway there?
When you're catatonic, you're pretty much in, what is it, airplane mode, I feel like. The human body's in airplane mode. It just sits there.
Yeah, and again, a lot of movies that show... I think we talked about this during the movie. A lot of the movies that show medical things, me being medical, some of the shows now... I can't think of the names of any of them, but they're not true to form as far as medically speaking. A lot of this definitely was. Even down to the small details like the Davis drug guide. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah, the little blue book.
Of course, only a nurse would probably pick that out. But, yeah, that was neat.
Yeah, I was watching you when they were describing the drug because I can't pronounce the drug. Oh. I can't even pronounce it. And
we just call it sucks.
You call it sucks?
Right.
Interesting. Interesting kind of way of shortening it because... they describe it in the film, and again, this isn't giving too much away, that it is a dosage to help people with...
it's a paralytic.
It's a paralytic, that's it. And it's supposed to... In the film, they talk about it's used for electroshock therapy, but is it used for anything else other than that?
We use it at the hospital for intubation. When a patient has to be suddenly placed on the ventilator and we have to intubate them and put the tube down their throat, a lot of times the doctors will call for what's called etomidate and sucks. That's two different medications. Sometimes they'll call for ROX, which is another... paralytic, and it has a long rocuri. I can't even pronounce it, but we just simply call it ROX. It makes it easier. But it is a given that if you're going to give a paralytic like sucks, you want to give a sedative, strong sedative like etomidate first. What is a worse feeling than intubation or tube being shoved down your throat is being paralyzed and knowing it.
Oh, whew.
So.
Yeah.
That thought occurred to me during this when they're talking about the killer using the drug sucks to paralyze his individuals. They are still awake. They are still aware. They just can't move to do anything about it.
You're right.
So rule of thumb, always give the sedative first, okay? That's because you want to knock them out before you paralyze them, that's for sure.
Don't you think it's, like, pretty scary, like, in horror films where, like, you know, what you've seen with, like, Jason, it's all quick, but, like, even though we didn't see it, but you can only imagine what the Gemini Killer did during his killings.
Right.
When he got the dosage right, because you also said that is also also scientifically accurate. You have to get the dosage right based on their weight.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of drugs are weight-based. And with any drug, you got to get the dosage right. If you don't, you can kill them.
Yeah. They said if you give too much,
even down to Tylenol, too much Tylenol will kill someone.
I know. And I make the, I know there's a comedian out there. His name's, I think it's like Cat Williams, where he just goes, yeah, weed's illegal, all this stuff. But if you take one too many Tylenol, that'll be the last one you ever take.
That's not untrue.
Yeah, that's the thing. So that was I don't know if anybody knows who that comedian is, but like, no, I just thought it was kind of interesting watching you and just like, you know, confirming, you know, how much truth is there to this.
That's absolutely true. 100%. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, a lot of the medical stuff they talked about here, it's real. It's right.
That's pretty cool.
Spot on.
I like that. Yeah. Now, was there like a few moments where you're just like, you didn't really care for, or you thought it was done, like it was something that was like too tedious, you know, something that you didn't like?
Again, if there's anything I didn't like, it's going to be the killing scenes because they cut it off too soon. The one right towards the end that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the little chase goes across and right after the jump scare, the scene that you thought would get me.
Yeah.
To me, that was almost unrealistic.
Okay.
The shot, I didn't care for that shot. I know you said you liked it, but to me, that was kind of the running.
Right, and I guess the reason I talk about that shot, for those of you who know this, people consider that to be the scariest movie moment like ever, even though like people have mixed feelings about Exorcist 3. And I guess the reason they like that is because if you look at it like the cinephile that I am, and your daughter might like this as well, the mise-en-scene of films, as I say, it's like the meat and potatoes of filming.
Okay.
That shot is about 4.5 minutes long. For some people that might be too long, but it's setting things up because you think about it. The cops are there. There's other people there. But when they leave, that's when she goes to investigate the noise. And then after that jump scare that got you that first time, she goes back, but the cops are back this time.
Uh-huh.
But the shot is still going. And it wasn't that, it really wasn't a long corridor. It was very short. Correct. But they set up a certain structure to make it look like that they were shooting down a long hallway. Because they were inside of a studio when they were doing that. Beautiful, beautiful scene, you know, filming technique. But again, the cops are there, but then all of a sudden, the guy calls him back, and he leaves, and then she goes again, and she's by herself.
Right.
That's why I like that scene, because it gives you that false security, thinking, okay, just there's people there with her, she's going to be okay. Oh, where are you guys going? Now she's by herself again. That's why I like it. But I understand also why you're just like, the other thing got me before there. But I like to show that to people to be like, if you're into like horror filmmaking, this is a good way to build suspense without making a gratuitous jump scare.
Now, I like things that remind me of other things. That's one thing that I do appreciate.
Like symbolisms?
No, like faces. And
that
one, it took me more than half the movie, to figure out those facial expressions that George C. Scott was making. As to who it reminded me of, and I knew it was not General Patton.
No.
I'm like, God, whose face is that? Whose face is that? And then in the car, when he smiled like he did, and I saw kind of the point in his forehead, I'm like, oh my God, that's Grandpa from the Munsters. That is Al Lewis.
Yes.
Which that was funny to me. That was great. But that's who he reminded me of.
It does. And if George C. Scott is a very well-known actor. Like we were talking about on the previous part, he's been in, you know, General Patton, that's like his big thing. But I remember him mostly from The Changeling. Did you ever hear or see The Changeling before?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
It has to do with a haunted house. And he's lost his daughter, and he's starting to get like these weird, like something about his like daughter and wherever this house is at are starting to like correlate together, where there's strange things happening. And his performance in there is just as good. Very loud, you know, how he's like, it's not in the file. It's not, you know.
Right. He was picture perfect for the character.
Oh, yeah, he's great. Oh,
I mean, they couldn't have picked a better person to play it.
Yeah, and I feel like that goes a little unchecked with the actors that are in these films.
If Fred Gwynn had been driving that police car during that scene, I would have lost it.
Oh, no. See, when you say Fred, I think of, no, don't go up there now. The ground is solid. No, it's not my cat no more.
My cousin. Cat. He was the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, but I just remember him from Pet Sematary.
I love Fred Gwynn.
Yeah, he's great. R.I.P. Fred. Awesome. Well, I'm glad you really enjoyed the film, and it had some cool symbolism moments. The only thing I will say, I don't know if you picked this up since I've seen it so many times, those shots where they keep showing low angle shots.
They did that a lot.
They did that a little too much. When there was moments like when the priest was walking over to the cross from the window, mm-hmm. that I liked because it kind of shows the focus mm-hmm. and how like he's kind of slowly coming to it, and then we get to it and it's so small. That I did like, but when we go to each building, I'm just like, we get it. The buildings are tall. What's the significance?
Yeah, well, you can edit this out, what I'm about to say, if you want to.
Sure.
I would advise no one to keep in mind Toothless Jesus when they're watching this movie.
That's fine. Oh, that's fine.
And I would not have thought that had you not said it.
Well, yeah, it's just that when you see that statue at the beginning, you see the eyes open, but when it gets close, it looks like Jesus has lost.
And that kind of creeped me out, though, when the eyes opened. I'm like, whoa, that's kind of wicked.
It was a good way to like get it started and everything.
But you ruined it.
I know. I'm terrible. I watched too
much. That looks like Jesus with no teeth.
Someone give Jesus back his dentures.
And we're not being sacrilegious people. That's where we're not. We're just
two
friends talking.
Those of you in Christianity, if your Savior has not developed a sense of humor since the creation of time,
oh, he definitely
if
has
he
a sense
has
of humor.
Not at this point, then the human race is doomed.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's just me. I'm
the gross. human race in general should be proof enough that the creator has a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you're talking to someone who's got Mel Brooks humor.
Ah,
Ten Commandments, you know, all that.
No. Blazing Saddles.
It is, yeah. But no, on that note, I did watch a lot of Mystery Science Theater. So when I watch stuff, I will sometimes just chime in to be like, you know, oh, this and that. And I'm like, yeah, oh, well, you know, just got to be funny. But if you did notice at the very beginning when that happened, if you saw a lot of people running, if you noticed, those were the priests that were running to the church. During when...
Yes, I mean? Yes.
So those are the kind of things I was picking up in this. I was like, okay, here's this. That's why I say every time I watch this film, I'll always try to pick up something new
or analyze it.
Because it's just what you do when you kind of... Especially with horror films as well, like you said, when you're watching things like, you know, Exorcist of Emily Rose. Now, how did you think it fared as an Exorcist film itself?
Well, most of it was not.
Fair.
The ending was great. But I liked the exorcism of Emily Rose because it was constant.
Mm-hmm.
And I am, first let me say that I am a believer. And watching the exorcism of Emily Rose, like I said before we started this, you cannot, I don't care who you are, believe in angels if you do not believe in demons. And I do believe they exist. That fight has always fascinated me. The fight between the good and the evil. The fight between, you know, Jesus and Satan. Whatever, how you want to put it. That has always fascinated me. And being the person with the historic knowledge, the history degree and everything else, and I've studied these religions, yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I meant, like, you can't be closed-minded with that stuff, and I think that's what hurts. Some people like you are the blessings that we have in religious communities because you open yourself up because you believe in it, but at the same time you feel like there's no set rule.
Oh,
like,
absolutely not. And that's a discussion for another day, I'm sure. But because I could go on and on and on with that one.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. No, but I meant like, well, with the film that we're doing, I just feel like it's always something
a part of it. Absolutely,
it has to be.
But yeah, you have with religion, you have to be open-minded. You can't not be.
Yeah.
You know, we can't assume that God is in a little box, you know.
Yeah. And along with your spiritualism as someone who, you know, does the paranormal investigations
as
well.
If he's there, we put him there.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, you got to be open-minded about it.
Cool.
You can't
not
be.
And I meant, like, this is probably my favorite film that, like, depicts the Legion story because I don't know if it's just me being, like, a favorite of Brad Dourif because I'm a little biased, but the whole thing with his voice even being distorted just kind of shows you as that because it's just, like, he did such a great job with it. I thought it was very terrifying at times, especially when he's taunting. That's what was getting me. You're just, like, he feels like... this person's going to be watching like he does with his victims.
Allow me to bring
nothing to he can do to change it.
Allow me to bring some historical insight.
Sure.
Okay. The term legion being associated with demons, of course, originates from the Bible. We're all very aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, they're talking to the demon. He says, I am legion. We are many. That's biblical. You have to remember that when the New Testament was going on, that's the time of Christ, the Israelites or the Jews or whatever you want to call them were underneath Roman rule at the time. What did they fear? The Roman legions which were the soldiers that put him in captivity. So naturally, the word legion would be used to incite fear.
Interesting. Okay.
And would be used to symbolize the dark side of the force.
There you go. Yeah. Interesting. I never knew that. Well, maybe that's why William Peter Blatty was just so good at... he was so fascinated with this and with his first book. I don't recommend... I'm not going to say, like, don't recommend reading it. If you want to read it your own. But I would say watch... either read the book first or just watch the movie, because the book is very different than the first Exorcist film. It doesn't get as elaborate as the first Exorcist film, but it is still a good read because it kind of, you know, quenched my fascination with how much of the first Exorcist film was quote-unquote true.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't say that in the first Exorcist film based on true events, but based on the book by William Peter Blatty, which is based on true events, or a true case, excuse me. And then that's when he came out with, you know, Legion as well. I haven't read Legion, though, but what I've heard from other film scholars and critics, it's basically the same thing. He pretty much just copied word for word and action for action for the film Exorcist 3.
Cool.
So, yeah. Yeah. You got any other final thoughts? Would you kind of recommend this film to anybody?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone who wants to watch it. And to me, it really wasn't a horror film. Not what I call horror. That was more reality.
Or maybe like a crime thriller.
Yeah, crime thriller. Good way to put it. I mean, because we could definitely have murderers. We do have murderers with an M.O. We have horrific murderers that would create crime scenes that way. So in that aspect, it's real. And like I said at the beginning, I believe in possession and exorcism. So to me, it was a realistic crime thriller.
This is not a true crime podcast, but I will talk about like some creepy stuff about like some criminals, serial killers to be exact. Richard Ramirez, he would also kind of refer himself to, even though he was the Night Stalker, he did believe that he had like lycanthropy, like aspects to himself, because he would only attack at night. So he did think that he did have some werewolfism in him. Okay. So that's why when you were saying like, you know, they do these things and you do believe like, you know, evil can incarnate itself even if it's not the person themselves.
It absolutely can.
Yeah.
And we're going to find that out soon in our investigation.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I know we were talking about the film, but like I said, with what we do here, aside from the podcast, I feel like this film went hand in hand as well.
I do too.
That's why I'm glad I kind of picked it. And at some point, I do want to show you Exorcist 1.
Oh, we got to do it.
That way you can get established. Yeah, that one's reserved for you now.
We got
to
do it.
I have to give you that one. But cool. Definitely rewatchable as well, you think? You would probably maybe watch it again?
Oh, yes. Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much,
Jim. Nothing else, because I'm a huge fan of Alan Lewis.
Oh, there you go. That's it. I'm a huge fan of Brad Dourif. Well, thanks so much for coming on to the show. I really appreciate all
your
insight.
I've enjoyed it.
Fellow horror fan, you know, paranormal stuff and absolutely, just spiritual stuff in general, you know. Just cool. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.